Welcome to the Contact Center Experts Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
All right. Hello, hello, hello. All right, everyone. That's great to see you too. Calm down. Yeah. Well, they are on fire today because of our guests. I can guarantee you that. Our guest today is Rebecca Gibson of Gibson Learning and Performance. She is a tireless contact center advocate who believes passionate employees are the key to engaged workplace and memorable customer experiences. She has over 20 years of experience partnering with customers to improve employee and operational performance. She has a gift for creating performance improvement initiatives and training events that lead to long-lasting results. In her day-to-day work as a consultant, she draws on her deep knowledge of adult learning and instructional design concepts to develop and deliver frontline and management training classes and to work with customers to bring out the best in their employees. So thank you for joining our show today. And, you know, let's just start off by, you know, the elephant in the room, COVID-19. And how do you see call centers, you know, changing the way that they're, you know, helping employees either get up to speed or to keep them motivated because, you know, they're all working in isolation for the most part these days?
Right. Everyone. It's funny because so many times when we talk about something like this, I always think, well, some people are in this situation and some people are in this situation. But really, in this case, everyone's in the same situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, while the technology specifics might be a little different, you know, everyone is sitting at home wearing a headset, talking to customers, working their shift pretty much the same way from their homes. What I've seen largely is that to keep people, that's where the kind of the human work comes in, though, right? Which is, I see a lot of managers just working really hard through every channel they have to stay connected to their employees. I was just reading something this morning that a supervisor in an insurance company sent me around the topic of over-communication. I think that's probably the biggest thing. Managers really, you know, they're still using OneNote, they're still using SharePoint, they're using their web tools, they're using their video conferencing. But I think after a few months, everybody realized that just duplicating what we were doing when we were all together wasn't enough. We needed to be connecting more. We needed to be sending messages multiple ways. We can't just send an email into the abyss and assume everybody gets it, right?
Right.
So that's probably the biggest thing I've seen is following up emails with phone calls or chats, checking in. I talk to a lot of managers who say, I have to make sure I check in with every single team manager, every single team member personally every day. You know, and people said when we worked in the office, I didn't necessarily do that all the time. Maybe I should have.
Yeah.
but I wasn't. But now I think what you said, the isolation, I think for every employee who loves it, there's somebody who is ready to go back. I think that over communication and that connection is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah, and I was watching a so we're part of the Microsoft startup program and get access to certain events that not everybody gets access to, and they were showing the future of work and how they were using Teams differently and really this kind of accelerated some of the things that they had in the works from a design and user interface to where, because we're all Zoomed out or Teamed out or WebExed out, you know, so they actually designed this interface to make it look like you're sitting in a stadium or, you know, any kind of background image that you have where it's fall.
Okay.
Because they said everybody, if you're just looking at the head with boxes in, or boxes with heads in them, you get fatigued and you start to just tone out or you're not paying attention. So they're saying, just mixing even the visuals up that we're looking at these days differently, or changing it up so that you're rearranging the heads differently or something like that, so people pay attention.
Isn't that so true? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of managers recently who have prioritized sending things to people's homes. For that kind of tactile, different experience, sending candy, sending somebody sent hats and they wore them on their happy hour kind of thing.
Sure.
But just that I guess, different modalities, right? Because you're right. I think everybody, to say we need to over-communicate, let's Zoom every day, I think people are tired of that. I worked with a center recently where, though, the managers, which I thought was really cool, when they were out just wherever, they were sending employees videos. So they had senior leaders who just, like, in their backyard would say, hey, guys, you know, just checking in. Let's talk about what's going on this week. You know, strategic initiatives, staying connected, how we're doing, what's coming up. But even just that, and then they would just send the video, and they would, post it on Yammer and a few other places. But it was just kind of switching it up a little bit. I think employees really appreciated that, too.
Yeah. No, and it's, I was just talking to one of our clients this morning about how I'm a big theater person. My family's involved in live performances. I'm a professional musician. So it's like you miss out on the organic energy that you get and that you feed off of each other, you know, like in a training class. You know, people love, you know, instructor-led training, and it's the worst possible way to train somebody worst possible way for retention, right? But we love it because we feed off of that energy that we get from being in the room together, from the spontaneity of it all, you know. So I think that's something I think we're all going to appreciate much more. But I think they're also realizing that you don't have to have that traditional instructor-led classroom activity to learn something, you know, which is great, because I've always been a proponent of, you know, doing things with online or simulations or hands-on or performance, you know, having great tools that are performance support. So that makes me wonder, do you see a lot more people or organizations in, you know, having to look for different ways to deliver training? What's been a creative approach that you've seen lately or that you've done yourself?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot remotely for sure. You know, that's another area where I think the initial inclination for a lot of people was, you know, let's change it to our conferencing platform, Zoom or Adobe Connect, or, you know, I'm kind of training on everything right now. And we'll capitalize on the tools that are in there so people can raise hands, they can do polls, they can annotate on screen. And all that was great. All that is great, and I still use it. But something that I've been trying to do a lot more recently and have been encouraging my clients to do is, again, switch up the modalities a little bit and creating more tactile experiences, because I can tell you, employees are tired of sitting behind that screen watching. And so I've been even just, so where a few months ago I might have had people voting in polls, now I have them using markers and creating their own paddles, and they raise their, you know, their red paddle or their green paddle, so we can all see it on the screen versus even using the in-tool voting. Because people are tired of it. I've also started, which is funny, putting my camera on. I have an easel with a flip chart in my office.
That's a good idea.
And I will even facilitate some conversations where I use that flip chart like I would have when we were in the classroom. Rather than using the whiteboard for everything, which people kind of are a little tired of. So some of it is kind of bringing back some
old
of
school.
What people liked about us being together and seeing each other it's not actually, I mean, I don't know about retention, but you know, but a big piece of it is people are tired of staring at screens. And to your point, what you said is something else I've been trying to do, which is where it we might have had an 8-hour classroom course rather than turn that into an 8-hour web course. We might do a few hours, and then I say, go do this assignment, call someone, you know, partner up with somebody, and maybe we break it up over 2 days. Or maybe just break for a few hours and then come back.
That's a good
just
idea.
Just trying to kind of change it a little bit, because I just, the fatigue is something that I've been really concerned about.
Well, and here's another suggestion, which I just thought of, is, you know, everybody has a smartphone or some device, you know, put maybe recorded calls, let them download it to their phone and say, go take a walk and listen to these calls. You know, so you're physically getting, you know, because you're getting the blood flowing, it gets through their brain, and they're just, you know, outside and getting some fresh air or wherever they decide to walk, but they're still, you know, so they can, they're still, you know, being trained, or they're still digesting information that they can learn from, but get them outside, get them, get the blood flowing. Because I saw, I don't know if you saw this, a little girl was sitting on a bike in her home in, and it had it so that she could pedal her bike and watch her kindergarten class at the same time. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that's, so she's physically, so she's not sitting there twitching in her chair. She's actually still being, you know, physical. She's pedaling her legs at a very slow pace, but that's keeping her attention span more focused, because her body's moving, but her brain's, you know, watching the screen and digesting what's going on.
That's a great idea. I mean, now that you say that, I could even see, you know, sometimes in your content, there are parts where you're explaining something. And so, you know, even if you took a 15 or 20 minute chunk of that and just recorded the audio, and, you know, send them on a walk and let's check back in 45 minutes and let's talk about it, right? I love that idea. That's a great idea. Yeah. I'm going to try that.
Yeah. Well, because I remember Steve Jobs always had these walking meetings. He would, you know, he'd take people, let's go for a walk, and he would walk, you know, and part of that was like, you know, you're thinking, but your blood's flowing, you're, you know, maybe you're retaining what's being said more because you're not just sitting there at a conference table, you know, again, you know, like these, you know, video meetings and things like that. So just, like you say, mix it up a little bit. Now, from a performance support standpoint, are there common tools that you see? Are they using, like, SharePoint? Are they using some kind of notebook thing? Or, you know, is there something out there that you think works better than others?
Yeah, you know, that's an area I feel like hasn't changed much, really, because I mean, in some ways, we were in the contact center. We were ready for this. So sending people home is largely a technical challenge and a social challenge, but it wasn't a work challenge. I mean, most reps work exactly the same way they did. When they were in the building, right? We don't get up and look at binders anymore, right? Like, we don't go we don't go look things up anymore. And so, you know, most centers were already using web-based knowledge bases, systems. Not that they are always great. I think for a lot of centers, that it's a weak spot. I think people are feeling it more because it used to be your supervisor was on the floor hovering. And filling in a lot of gaps. And now you're kind of on your own. And, you know, people use chat and things like that to fill in those gaps. And I'm seeing a lot of that. It's interesting because I don't feel – here's what I hear, and I often have to help clients put this together. I spend a lot of time in training and performance support, and people always want to make training shorter and have proficient employees faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times people will slide their agendas over to me and, you know, how could we engineer this to get people through faster? Or when we're in dire straits, a lot of times trainers are told, can you do it in 2 weeks instead of three?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a lot of people making the connection that if you had more effective performance support tools, you could get people proficient faster, and you wouldn't need them to be as proficient, meaning everything up in their heads, right? The day they go live, because it would be, and that includes things like knowledge bases. It includes systems that are tied together, where I'm not working in three systems, where I have to look up the customer in every system, so now I have to learn three systems when in reality the flow would be better supported if it was one. And then other tools that are kind of on the periphery. I have a client using a relatively new-ish speech rec program that will actually be detecting words that the customer or the agent is saying, and and using AI and using those tools to be surfacing knowledge base articles, even telling people to go maybe faster or slower, like giving you a compared to the customer. So rather than having to spend a ton of time on that stuff in the classroom, you can let the tool do some of that coaching.
We hear that a lot.
But I still see really, really clunky SharePoints. And knowledge bases that aren't necessarily designed by the people who are doing the work. Even articles that are redundant, that are too long. Just kind of all of those things knowledge bases.
That's so funny that you pinpointed that, compressing the training, you know, and that's one thing that, when I tell people, people say, well, why do people buy your simulator? I said, well, time to market. It's, we can get them up faster, time to market. That's what everybody's scrambling for, and one gentleman from Citibank said, we spend 6 weeks in training through between classroom and nesting. And he says, and then they get on the phones and they realize, oh, I don't like talking to live people, And he says, if we could compress it down to 4 weeks, look at all the money we're going to save, when people decide to opt out and not show up to work. And so it is, the value of training and the value of good training, I get, these people that say, well, we're the trainers, they're our clients internally. I said, that's great, and that's perfect, but you're never going to get a seat at the board table. You're never going to get a seat at being involved in budget conversations unless you prove the value of training and really hone in on the return on investment as far as, taking it to the level of, if we lose one customer because of a bad experience, what's that cost the organization? Now multiply that times X, right? So I don't know if you ever get to have those conversations with your clients.
I do, and sometimes I'm the person who has to push that because there is training is just seen as a utility, not as a strategic investment. It still surprises me when I see training that's happening that is worthless.
Right.
So money and time going there, but then not a lot of rigor around treating training like a strategic investment, right? So what are we getting out of it? How do we optimize it? How do we make sure how do we cut out the waste and fill it with good stuff, right?
Yeah.
And fill it with things. And is something I do when I work with training departments specifically a lot, is we sometimes take a step back a little bit and kind of look at what do you hope, what do you want your new hire to get out of training? And knowledge and knowing how to do the job, that's, I mean, that's a lot. But it's not everything, right? Because you also want to build confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to build connection to the company, to the work they do, to
the, understanding
the
brand.
You want people to feel good about the decision that they made to come work here.
Yeah.
That's a that is a role that new hire training should play.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I'm not sure it works
exactly
that way in a lot of centers.
No, and I even created, you know what the ADDIE model is, of course. So I created the improv model because in Chicago here, improv is a big thing. So, but the I stands for impact. What is the impact to the business if I create this training program? And then one of the easiest ones to push people on is sales training. Okay, I'm going to train the salesperson on this product. What percentage of quota falls on their shoulders when they sell this product? What percent of profit does a company see as a result of them selling this product? And if you get people start thinking in those terms and in that, in framing it that way, they approach training completely differently.
And I'll add to that, what is going to drive the sale of that product in training,
exactly,
right? Because is it just you know the product? You can list the features of the product. You know how much it costs. You know the technical specifications. Or is it I'm going to teach you how to sell this product?
Which is
messaging, market positioning, overcoming
objection.
And that, I think, is, we just assume that salespeople are going to be able to overlay those skills on top of this, like, feature training. But we do the same thing with contact center reps, right? We spend 4 weeks or 6 weeks teaching you how to process an order, teaching you about our products, teaching you rules. But then it happens a lot because I talk to supervisors and they say, and I, it's a question I always ask now, which is how fully baked is a contact center rep when they come out of training? Like, are they ready to put a headset on and take calls? And the majority of the time I hear supervisors say, oh, no.
No,
they don't know how to. The first time they take a call, they're petrified because they have no idea what it, what's going to happen. And I'm thinking, how can we not be talking about this? Listening to calls, rating calls.
Yeah.
How can we not be doing this in the classroom? but it's just not. To your point, people say train them. And so we say, okay, well, they need to know how to use systems and they need to know the product. And so we put together an agenda that does that. And we don't really think about
or
what are we
role played. We role played, once, you know, because that's all the time you have.
Yeah.
One time through, one scenario, and then off you go, you know. And that's why, you know, I'm so anti-SCORM now because – SCORM was designed to measure attendance and completion, not effectiveness. And, you know, so I'm on this bandwagon of anti-SCORM, you know, using tools like ours, or even XAI is doing some of that now, but it's still not being widely adopted. And and it goes back down to impact. What is the impact you're having on the business? If I could just say, 80% of the people got 80% on their passing scores for this test. Well, big deal. You know, what does that mean to the business? That they know how to take a test? Okay.
Tests are bad. I just say that now. Like, tests make people feel good and more secure. But it's more about I did my job as a trainer.
Yes.
It's not about... Because you can pass, but it's not about can you perform this task in the environment that you are going to be asked to perform it, you know, in a realistic manner. And we're just not great at that. We're just not, it's not the best in a lot of organizations.
There's a company that, so I speak at a lot of training conferences, and I was sitting there in the audience listening to a company called Area 9, and they use something called adaptive learning. And I'm like sitting listening to this, I'm like, wait a minute. That's so they, this Bloom's study of taxonomy and all this and that, and they said, well, you know, classroom training, you know, that's not most effective. Then the next most effective is peer-to-peer. But the most effective is a private tutor, a one-on-one tutor. And, you know, so then I, you know, took that, and they had this great, you know, document that kind of outlined all that. I said, well, that's what our simulator is. It's a tutor. It's tutoring you. It's a bot, but it's tutoring you through the simulation. You know, and then I, you know, do a lot of times compare that you heard Gladwell's 10,000 hours and you'll master whatever, you know, versus Anders Ericsson, who does more deliberate. So in deliberate practice, you know, you have a purpose, you have a goal in mind, you get, it has to be challenging, you get immediate feedback, and you adjust based upon the feedback and all these things. So it's just, you know, but nobody knew how to scale that, you know, one-on-one kind of tutoring. So now the technology that's out there today, you know, beyond just ours, like you said, the AI technology that's in the production environment, kind of coaching them and whispering in their ear, you know, so I think, you know, as trainers, they, you know, you need to start exploring these things, because the digital transformation that all the large, all companies are talking about, they think only falls into the IT world or the marketing world. But it's like, no, first and foremost, it's, you know, and I wrote a blog post on you should introduce AI into your training platform before anything else.
Because yeah, I agree with that.
You're going to get this huge win by doing that. So it's, I know I'm facing an uphill battle with with the general population
out there.
Especially,
it's interesting you say that, especially because we are not training airline pilots, right, where expertise takes a long time to build. When most of us look at our reps, within a few months, they're at not peak productivity, but close to it.
Yeah.
85-90% there. So reps, I mean, I think that they do learn through repetition. I mean, the reason I think that their learning curve, that they move through the learning curve so quickly is because they take calls all day long.
All day long, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's, there is this, I do think that the model that you're describing is really compelling, because we know reps can learn how to do this job quickly, and we know that they largely learn a lot of things on the job.
Right.
So anything we can do to, I think, first lessen the risk, right? Because the risk is if we, you know, if we were to say, well, if they learn on the job, let's just, like, let them figure it out. Well, that's obviously a risky strategy for those first few weeks. On both the customer side and the agent side. But at the same time, I think that the model that you're talking about is a way to kind of remove the risk while allowing the rep to learn by doing. Because we know that them sitting watching a projector image of the system while the trainer walks through it and verbally explains it to them, we know that's not it.
Right.
Anything that we can do to kind of facilitate something that's more realistic, I think, is really all that we can hope for.
Right. Exactly. Oh, yeah, you've drank my Kool-Aid. Thank you.
I came in drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, that's great. Well, so for my last question, you know, what observation or words of advice can you give to the executives out there listening to this show in regards to their contact center? You know, what would you suggest? You know, because chances are we're going to be at least another 6 months or longer, you know, working remotely, or some aren't going to move back to physical spaces. So what's one kind of word of advice that you would give someone?
I feel like we are really well positioned right now to center, especially frontline employees. You know, the way that most places ran call centers when everybody worked inside was around control and me watching you. And, you know, it was kind of a suspicious, like, I'm going to time everything you do and see what you're doing and all of that. Now, a lot of that transferred with people going home because I can still see what you're doing. But at the same time, every client I've talked to said, my employees stepped up. They have been amazing. I have been really impressed with their ability to stay focused and work at home. I hear that from everyone. And I really hope that senior leadership takes this as an opportunity to think about how those employees have the opportunity to contribute to, you know, they are the people who I've been reading and writing a lot about customer experience recently for a project, and I'm really thinking about those are the people who are closest to your customers, who know them better than anyone in your organization. And I really hope that organizations pivot to valuing, involving, engaging, especially our frontline employees in problem solving, innovation, getting to know the customer
system
better.
Design.
They have so much to contribute and such a great view of our business. And some of them just never get a chance to get off the phone and contribute in that way. And I would really like to see that change.
That's awesome. Well, on that note, our audience thanks you for being here. We've just really, you know, enjoyed your wisdom and your words of advice. So, you know, we're hopeful we'll have you back on in the future as well.
Thanks, Nancy. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's been fun. Thanks for joining me.